Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Cassie. Hey, Darkhearts.
Hey, Darkhearts. Forgot what I was saying there for a second. It seems like it's been so long, but we were only off a week, so.
I know. A lot has happened in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. So. And now it's Valentine's. Well, it will be Valentine's Day when this comes out, which means we're halfway through February almost.
Oh my God. Yeah. And it's a leap year. I totally forgot it's a leap year.
It like throws off a lot of shit for me. Like not really, but like I've always thought March, it's always the same dates on the same days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like now it throws that all off. And it's
I
like,
know, it's so weird.
I don't know why. I don't want the extra day. I just want it to be a day closer to like spring. Whether that means, I mean, it doesn't change the fact that the weather won't change that day, but.
I know, but still, it is beautiful out today. I'm glad the sun came out this morning. Yes. It was pretty dreary.
I know. I think that makes a huge difference. Like, I need that sunshine. The older I get, I'm like, gosh, I feel like such an angry old lady. Like, where's the sun? I need the sun. I need my vitamin D, but really, I do like the sun, so.
I know. It definitely helps. It helps a lot, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel the same. Yeah.
So yeah.
You guys, came to Malvern Manor. Thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. I'm still trying to go through the audio I took and like pictures and stuff. Obviously last week I didn't go through it at all because I had surgery and I slept a lot last week.
Yeah. You basically came back and like, we haven't even talked about the event really because you came back, you worked. I like know your whole schedule.
I know. Yep. Nope. I worked. And then I feel like we did something that Saturday or something with the kids or something happened. Or no, that's right. So the kids were with my mother-in-law and then my daughter got sick.
Oh,
and we
right.
ended up, my husband and I were trying to have a date night or whatever. And then we ended up driving to pick her up, took her to urgent care on Sunday.
Are you there?
You're frozen.
Are you there? It just froze for like 5 seconds. Okay.
Same, but I know the audio is usually still going, so it'll be okay. But yeah.
Okay.
So
your daughter got sick.
She got sick, so we went and picked her up. Sunday, I had to take her to urgent care. She had a terrible ear infection. Then we celebrated my son's birthday. And then Monday, I had surgery. I got my hysterectomy. Oh, yeah. She stayed home for a few days, which luckily between my sister and my mother-in-law, like, it was taken care of. Well, she stayed home Monday. Tuesday, she tried to go to school. I came home Tuesday morning, and my sister had to go pick her up, like, Tuesday afternoon. And so it's been, like, it was just, like, between – she finally, by, like, Wednesday, Thursday, was getting back on track with, like, sleep. Because she had not been sleeping well with it and everything. So, like, a lot of it was just her being so tired.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So.
That's brutal.
Yeah. So then it was, like, I slept a lot last week with recovery and stuff. And then today my daughter went to the ENT and they're like, yeah, she needs tubes and her adenoids removed. So, you know, it's a lot of fun. So like, it's been a lot in the last like week. It was like nonstop. So,
yeah. So
but the event was a ton of fun. It was a great turnout. I had some personal experiences. I didn't like hear anything per se, but I had a lot of feelings. There was one basement part, like both the there were two basements, but they were like outdoor cellary type kinds.
Okay.
And the one, I was like, the first one, I was like, I don't want to go down there. This feels like a place that they kept someone that they didn't want. Like, it was definitely like horror movie vibes of like people being left in there. And there was a woman there who was a medium who could see stuff. And she went into that one. I was like, I can't, I'll stay here for you, you know?
Yeah.
And she witnessed a young man, like 15 teenager, who had like been starved to death. And we had heard that they actually did find human remains in that basement at one point.
Hell no.
Mm-hmm. So I'm still trying to see. There was a little bit. I would like to go back with less people.
I would like to go. I could not make it, unfortunately. But so I don't have any experiences. But I would prefer, I think, to go with a smaller crowd.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was a ton of fun and stuff, but it did get to the point we should have, you know, note to self next time, we should have broken up after them. Because unfortunately with the movie, you could hear throughout the house. And then later we should have maybe broken up into like, okay, a group of people can go here for this long, a group of people here. Because some of us were in the attic trying to get some responses and stuff, and then we could hear people in the hallway below us and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Sounds like so a fun, like, fun thing to do as a group, but if you're genuinely trying to, like, get stuff to use or to feel, then it's not,
So, but, that, you know, there's definitely some heavy spots in that house, I tell you what, but, the owner was fantastic. He stayed there for a while too. I loved chatting with him. So I would definitely love, the guys from After the Credits and Whitmore and stuff, like, they were fantastic. I would love to do an event with them again, you know, something similar or whatever. I didn't personally watch the movie because I was a little worried it was going to be too much gore. I heard it wasn't terrible, but it sounded like an interesting premise. But it was a ton of fun. We met some great people, too. So I always love that type of stuff, like meeting people and, like, seeing these places. But, yeah, like I said, we got there, and before there was a ton of people, my sister and I were walking around, and she was taking pictures, and we got to the stairway, and she was about to go up, and her camera said the memory card was full, and she's like, there's no way. So she turned it off and turned it back on, and she lost all of her photos.
Weird.
I had a video camcorder that I was using, and there were several times that it shut off on me with a full battery.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go sometime. Yeah. Like, we should just go up one day randomly. And when I have time,
that would be so much fun. Yeah. I stepped into the one room and I told my sister, because I'm not going to call myself a medium. I'm still working on those types of things and stuff like that and communication. But I stepped into this room and I instantly felt nauseous and sick to my stomach. It was too heavy in there for me. I was like, Jesse, I have to step out. I can't be in here. And she goes, Cassie, she goes, this is Inez's room, which is the main room I wanted to go to, which is the little girl who died by accidental hanging. And I hadn't even seen it, but there was this, sign.
Just scared me. He felt the presence too.
I know. But yeah, there was a sign and it was like her room and stuff. And so that one was always a bit heavy and stuff. And, you know, we learned more about the place, like some of the other people in that house, you know, and the stuff, because there's another room where there's an older man who apparently does not like women. It's like, okay. Well, of course. Okay.
Typical.
Yep. So it was a lot of fun though. I really enjoyed it and, you know, went to work the next day. I was definitely very tired because I didn't get home until like 1:30 in the morning. So I didn't get to sleep till after 2. Then I was up by 7 and
dang, that's a lot. So it's good that you've had time to sleep, sort of. I mean,
I know.
I don't know what good sleep it is when you're still like a recovery sleep, but sleep is
sleep. I've had some decent sleep. And like I was telling you before we got on here, I'm surprised, like, they gave me, you know, narcotics and I took it a couple times, but mainly I've been sticking with that 800 milligrams of ibuprofen. And
good for you.
Turns out that there was more with my uterus than we realized. And so a lot of it just felt like my most intense period cramps, which is like, usually when we see a uterus like this, that's typical for people. So,
well, I'm glad you rid of the uterus.
Yeah.
That old thing.
Now I don't have to worry about it. You know, I go
back.
You
had a good run and now,
you know,
it's retired.
Now it's retired and we're out the door. And So that's, it's just been the last week and a half has just been nonstop.
Yeah. So I'm glad we didn't do an episode, I guess, because that would have not. I was thinking about that timeline. I'm like, that never would have probably worked unless we recorded a whole week ahead of time.
I was going to say, if we had done it a whole week, but it, like, that week leading up to it and everything, like, I had so much I was trying to get done to prepare for the event and then for me not working. And
right.
Yeah, it was definitely, it's probably for the best. We just had that little break because,
because here we go. I mean, and now it's like, we're just back into it again. So, but I guess, like we, you know, kind of talking about different cases and things and stuff now. I mean, technically we could have just used your little experience at Malvern Manor to lead into it, but I want to hear what you got still, because it's still nice to stay relevant with the news.
Yeah. So I still don't, honestly, I don't have a lot. I won't lie, but I did, cause I was trying to look to see if there's more. I was like, okay, it's been now a month since those three men in Kansas. And the only update I can find is that oh, you know, it's a dog barking kind of day.
Mother, hey.
Is that...
I'll mute.
The toxicology report, police Remy, detectives have it.
Do you want to buzz you?
And they've sat down and talked with the family.
Uh-huh.
But they're not releasing anything.
That's so weird.
And it's...
It's so frustrating. It's
so interesting. So, like, yeah, they have the toxicology, but they're not releasing it at all. And, like, one article, which I can't remember what I looked at, said that they were still just looking at it as a death investigation, not a homicide.
Maybe they just have to have more in play, like, to prove that something, I mean, was given to them without their knowledge or... Yeah. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I saw like a week ago, one of the guys' parents talked to like, I think it was People or USA or something like that. And they were like, well, even this was kind of a little ridiculous. I only skimmed it. But like one thing, she was like, he didn't take drugs to get dead. She was like, if he took them, it was just to relax and have fun. He didn't have a drug problem, but he didn't take them to get dead. I was like, well, with the exception of people who are intentionally trying to complete suicide, I don't think anyone takes drugs to try to die.
No. Yeah, not usually.
But, you know, it, you know, fentanyl-laced coke has been a big problem for a long time, but you would think then it would be more than just these three...
I know.
Guys. And there's still so much weird stuff with it. Yeah, I don't like
the
know.
Circumstances are just odd. Very odd.
Yeah, the circumstances are so weird. And I don't know. It seems weird to me that they're keeping it so tight-lipped. Like,
yeah.
If they're only treating this as a death investigation and not a possible homicide, like... I guess maybe if you're like, well, in case it is, like, we're still not going to let anything out. I don't know.
Yeah. I know. I just need answers like now. And unfortunately, they don't care if I have answers. So,
well, this seems like one too that I'm like, it's been a month.
Yeah.
And it feels like this is the type of case that you would think would have answers quicker. Like it, I mean, again, yes, yeah. We're trying to build a case maybe, but like.
They've released very, very little. To the public, which is weird.
Like, they haven't definitively said, hey, these are accidental, these were accidental deaths.
Right.
Or, you know, something like that. And so it seems weird to me that they're taking so long to say one way or another.
Yeah, I agree. Like, there has to be more going on there than obviously we're aware of. But,
right.
Like, at least give us a little something because that's real weird.
It's so weird. So yeah, so I don't have a whole lot. There was another local case that I saw a local man, but like it involved a teenage young girl and child pornography, and I was like, I don't want to talk. Like, it's so heavy.
Nah, like let's not do that one. So that's fine.
No, the dude got 40 years in prison. I'm like, cool, you should get life. I'm just gonna say I feel like if you're involved in pedophilia or child pornography or child sexual assault in any way, to life
forever. Yep.
Death sentence, like,
especially if there's even a possibility of them getting out again, depending on what age, like, they're going to do it again. It's just a matter of time. So
I think the death penalty, especially when you have like explicit proof of it, the death penalty should be on the table for that.
That is horrific. Yeah,
because you have murdered a childhood.
Yeah, literally. I mean,
so
that, and that's just leading to way more
trauma.
Yeah. I agree.
So, listen, that's my hot take. If you're a pedophile, I think you should get the death sentence. I think that should be on the table. Yeah,
and it should be something absolutely terrible. I wish there was several options to pick from, like the jury got to select which one they wanted, you know, but,
you know,
unfortunately, that's not where we're at. So,
you know, I can get behind vigilantism sometimes. So
yeah, definitely 100% behind that, depending on the case.
Not great.
So
one day they're going to use this against me in the court of law.
I know. Anything you say will be used against you. Okay. So yeah, I was going to tell a random story about something going on in my neighborhood, but I'll just tell you it later because I also don't need that out there in case people know where I live and who. And, yeah, fair. I'll just tell you that story later. Okay.
Okay.
So this week, guys, we're going to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. This one is a Valentine one because I was trying to find a good one and it happened. I don't good one. Yeah, know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one is specific to Valentine's Day. So here you go. Here's your Valentine treat from me. So, yeah, we're going to talk about this couple, I guess. I'm not going to go into a ton of their background up front, just a little bit, kind of just so you kind of have an idea of them, their relationship, whatever. So Susan Shibley, she grew up with four brothers, super tight knit family. She would banter with her brothers all the time. They all just teased each other, and she really just, you know, taught her kids to put others before themselves as she got older. Family was the most important thing to her. Growing up, it was like that. And then she was married. I don't know anything really about the first marriage, which doesn't really play into this at all, but she did have two kids from her first marriage and then got divorced. And she got remarried to John Hamilton. So this was her husband. He also just fit in very well with her family. They joked around with him a lot as well. And they always teased him and said that he had her wrapped around his finger and he would do anything for her. He would shower her with gifts. He was a doctor, a gynecologist to be specific. He gave her a Porsche the day they got married. So like, yeah, he had a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they would go on exotic vacations all the time. Susan even described him as like a silver fox. She said, you know, and he had nice blue eyes, great smile. Just a great match, really, from the sounds of it. And I don't really know much about either of their backgrounds, like I said, other than that. But so like they had gotten married in 1987. I guess I don't think I had said that yet. So
nope, not yet. Okay.
So that's kind of where we're at there. So they lived in Oklahoma, and John was actually like the top surgeon in the state. So he had delivered the most babies in Oklahoma at that time, like mid 80s. I don't know what year specifically, but around that time it was like, woo. And he was just really subdued. He was just a great husband. So Susan's daughter, Angela, she described him as just being with Susan like every night. He would always come home from work to her. He wasn't the kind that wanted to go out with friends or do any of that kind of thing. He was super involved with Angela, and I don't know the brother's name. I could never find that anywhere, but he was super like just good stepdad to them. And he would help Angela with her science and math homework all the time because that was his, you know, strong suit.
Yeah.
And so she just said he was really helpful and a huge part of their life. And her mom and him were very much in love. So Susan eventually works at this this Oklahoma women's clinic in Oklahoma City with John. So he was the primary doctor there. And she would kind of help like counsel women there. She basically just kind of oversaw the whole clinic in general. So this is where it can get a little iffy, which we're not going into political stances on any of this, but his clinic did do abortions. So this kind of plays into the whole story later is why I'm mentioning it. But their big thing was they were really committed to helping women do what they needed to do. He really thought he was helping women out. And Susan really wanted to empower women and let them have a choice. So she was a big part of this. So as we know, Oklahoma, very controversial state for this.
Yes.
So like I said, we won't go into the opinion on all that, but let's just say it's safe to say that several people there disagreed with this, and they had tons of protesters and picketers and everything outside their clinic, as you can imagine.
I mean, yeah, just like, and this was like, stuff and
so like, in the 90s, especially, I mean, late 90s, I think kind of by this time. So, with that being said, they, you know, were always dealing with that kind of thing, and they would get lots of threats all the time. At home, they got letters, they got faxes, because, you know, in the 90s, faxes were a big thing. One of them specifically was like a picture of John, and it said wanted, Dr. John Hamilton, wanted for murder. You know, and it was tons of threats, like very scary. And it was really hard for Susan because she was just a very sweet, caring person, and she struggled with the fact that things could happen. And
yeah,
this was around the time.
Children.
Yes. And this was around the time too, when they were talking about, specifically around this time, there was tons of murders of doctors and like a couple bombings. I didn't go into look to all those details, but just around the country at abortion clinics. Mm-hmm. So like she knew that it was very scary. And not only that, but she was like, okay, I'm a target too, because I'm his wife and I work there.
And she works there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so John was always reassuring her, like, it's going to be okay. You know, just we'll be good. And so on Valentine's Day in 2001, a 911 call comes in and it's John. He's calling and he is extremely panicked. He's saying that his wife is covered in blood. It looks like somebody hurt her. He told them, he said, I'm a doctor. I'm doing all the things I know to do. I'm giving her CPR, but I can't find a pulse. Like, I just need someone to get here and help me ASAP. So paramedics rush there. And unfortunately, they were unable to revive Susan. So Susan dies, which is sad because she was very pretty too. I mean, I'll post the pictures and stuff. And she just looked like a nice person. But so Randy Scott, he's the main detective on this case. So he said that when they got to the home, they found a woman in the back bathroom of their home. The husband had called it in. And when they entered the home, they said that this house was like immaculate, which I'll post some pictures of their house. And they're, I mean, we're talking like mansion style.
Oh, I'm
like,
sure. Yeah.
Which, I mean, they had the money. And not only was it just huge and nice, it was very clean and just everything was in a spot. Cause I think by now too, her kids are gone and out of the house.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Yeah. Cause they were like, I think in one of the wedding pictures I saw, they looked like they were like maybe middle school age then. And so
gotcha. As I'm saying, they got then, married in 87. Yeah. So then, yeah.
Yeah. So I know the daughter was like away in New York and I don't know about the son, but they were gone. So it was just the two that lived in this huge home. And so my point, I guess, was like, there's no kids to make it messy. Cause I thought the only people that have clean houses are people without kids. So, you know, but, the cop said too that, you know, they saw bloody footprints that went from the front door down the hallway towards the bedroom and then to the bathroom that was attached to the bedroom. And this bathroom was huge. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it, you know, bigger than like my master bedroom, just the bathroom alone. Very nice. And that's where Susan was found. So there were like, there was a necktie like around her throat and it had left, you know, a ligature mark. And then they also can see multiple head wounds. Part of her brain was even exposed. So she had taken quite a beating.
Yeah.
They were not sure really what weapon was used, but clearly something that caused severe head trauma, which they assume is the cause of death. And Detective Randy, what did I say his last name is Scott? Okay. So he said that this was one of the bloodiest crime scenes that he has ever been on. And he said that like, just with the condition of the body and the amount of blood that was found, it was very brutal. So, but they don't see immediately like a weapon or anything that was used. So they do an extensive search for the weapon around the house, in the house, and they don't find anything anywhere. So they assume either it was taken from the scene or hidden well enough that they could never find it. So while this is all happening and they're in the house, poor John, you know, he's out in the patrol car waiting, like in complete shock. He's crying. He's delirious. He's emotional. They're trying to just like calm him down. And so they take him to the police station to talk to him more, which obviously they're going to do that anyway. And they take photographs of him, how he was found there, mm-hmm. Which he was covered in blood because he had been giving CPR and was like cradling her. And so they take all of his clothes. And it's just ironic too, because they put him in, like, they don't have any extra clothes other than like a jumpsuit. So he's like being interviewed in this orange jumpsuit, which, you know, for a doctor, I'm sure that's a very humiliating thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and they even have tapes of him sitting in this room waiting to be interrogated. And he's just like completely out of it. I mean, he's like, I can't be in this room. Why do they have me waiting in this room? Can't I go somewhere else? It's a nicer room. Like, just kind of entitled as well, which I was like, dude, this is how this goes. But yeah, so they, you know, ask him about his day. So he said he had got up that morning. He went to the clinic and did a surgery early, like a 7 o'clock surgery. It was only 2 miles from where they live, so he could go home in between things quite often. So after his first surgery, he returned home because he wanted to give Susan a Valentine's Day card, and he had an expensive arrangement of red orchids. So,
oh.
Yeah, okay, very expensive, it said, when I was researching. I'm like, okay, yeah.
I mean, orchids noted. Are already pricey, but
yeah,
I'm red, like, so yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he didn't mess around, though. I mean, they had the best of the best. So,
right.
So he goes home for that little break. They exchange gifts, whatever. Then he goes back to the hospital because he had another surgery scheduled at 9 a.m. And then after that, he said he went back home, and that's when he had found Susan. So he said when he got home, the front door was unlocked, which is weird because he said it's never unlocked. He went straight back to the bathroom because he was yelling her name, and he found her laying on the floor. He said that's when he immediately called 911 and began CPR. So based on that and the timeline, it looks like whoever killed her struck while John was at the hospital during this second surgery, because it was like an hour and a half time span, I think.
Yeah.
So he wasn't the target of the investigation. He was just, they said, the target of finding out what happened, since he was the right, one that had found her.
To kind of get a timeline.
Yeah. So, you know, they thought about, hold on, what does my note say here? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Sorry. My notes, sometimes I do like shorthand notes, and I'm like, what did I mean by that? Okay. So, you know, the cops too know that he does abortions, and they know that's a very hot topic, and
a lot of heat comes
from that. So they look in that, you know, and they're wondering if it's someone who had been targeting them, and was he actually the target and he just wasn't home. But, you know, they think that he's at least safe with them at the police station, because they think, you know, if someone was looking for him and killed her, that they're probably still looking for him. So they're like, we're just going to keep him here anyway. Especially with all the death threats that they see that he has received with, amount of time over the time period, which I'm sure was pretty much an ongoing thing.
Right.
So based on that, they bring in the ringleader of this local protest group. I don't even know what this group was called, but this guy comes in. And after talking with him and everything, they pretty much believe there's no reason this guy had anything to do with it. He was like, yeah, we don't support this, but we're not going to kill people over it. Like, that's our whole argument. So
I was going to say, like, it's kind of hypocritical to be like, yeah, you're a murderer, so I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. So he was like, yeah, like, we don't like this guy, but like, we're not going to take it to that extreme. We just want to piss him off and stand outside his clinic. So, then they're like, okay, well, was this like a burglary gone wrong? They have a shit ton of money. They live in this super nice neighborhood. So, you know, they look around and like nothing was really out. I mean, it didn't look like your typical burglary with things on the floor, drawers pulled out, all the things. So, you know, and based on that too, they don't think anything is really missing. So they don't really feel like this is a theory that's going to work here either. So they kind of are just like at this dead end of what the hell happened in this hour and a half, and who was so angry to basically smash her face in. Like, that's what it came down to. So then it kind of gets going a certain direction, because they had a housekeeper, and she is actually able to provide some information that when they ask her, I mean, she's probably going to know more about if things are missing in that house if she's the housekeeper, because
she's also going to know if there's some tension between the doctor and his wife.
Right. Yeah. So she said that there was this large statue that sat on the counter in the bathroom where Susan was found. And that's the only thing that she can really determine that's missing. So now they're like, well, that could have been used as the weapon, because they said it was something obviously very heavy.
Right.
And so they think that this was maybe like a weapon of opportunity too. So like, okay, someone didn't come, like, this wasn't necessarily premeditated, because if someone just came in and grabbed what was right there and
they had no way to know that they would have something on hand. Yeah.
So they said that could, you know, also imply just like a sudden explosion of anger. So then, which I don't know, some of the timeline of the way they investigated it was interesting to me, because I kind of thought, well, why wouldn't you have done that to begin with? But, you know, so they go to this hospital where John had performed his surgeries. So, you know, they confirm he had been there for that 7:30 a.m. one, and he had left, and then he came back. But they find out that he was a little bit late getting back for this second surgery. The whoever, the nurse, the front desk, they said they had paged him and they didn't get a response because they had put this patient under the anesthesia and he wasn't there yet. And so they paged him and he finally showed up at 9:30. This was supposed to be at 9. So they're like, this is weird. He never told us he was late coming back to the surgery. Yeah, he just said that he was back for the 9 a.m. surgery.
So you guys didn't check his alibi at all.
Right. And I was kind of like, this is why I'm like, why wouldn't you have do that in the beginning just to eliminate? But, you know, so they're like, there's a half hour of time now unaccounted for. And the way he worded it was interesting because he didn't say, yeah, I was late. He just said, yeah. And then I went back for my 9 a.m. surgery. Because, it was scheduled at 9 a.m. So, like, okay, I get it. I see what you did there. Uh-huh. So now they're like, okay, hold up. Okay, now John, now he's our prime suspect. So they immediately get a warrant and search his car. And they find some of Susan's blood and skin, like, on the steering wheel. Inside the car, they also find something that is very telling. So they find the card that Susan gave him for Valentine's Day. And she wrote in it, and the note that she wrote in it says, obviously, I bought this before last Monday. So I guess maybe they don't seem so appropriate now. But I do love you. Have a good day,
Susan. I know this story. Yeah.
You know, I almost did this one like a year ago, and I kept thinking, I'm going to wait to do this for Valentine's Day because it's just fitting.
I'm pretty sure I've watched something on this, too.
I watched, which I'll give you that stuff at the end, to the info. There might be more than one. The one I watched was, I don't recommend, but it's
fine. Yeah, I thought it was this case, but until you said that specifically, I was like, maybe I know. Another one.
I like to try, sometimes it's like you just know up front who it was, but I'm like, sometimes it's fun to lead into it and see if, you know.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying,
And so I'm like, well, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know. Okay. So where was I at?
About what her Valentine's Day cards?
Oh, right. Yeah. So it turns out it sounds like things had changed fairly recently. Mm-hmm. And that's probably not a Valentine card you want to get. Like, I'm thinking if I got that, I'd be like, wow, like, that's shitty. Sorry, my dog is being loud and I'm not going to mess with my mic because we're having audio issues. So they bring the card to John and they're like, what the hell is this? You know, John says, oh, well, 2 days before Valentine's Day, Susan noticed something weird on the phone bill. And so they look at the phone bill. Well, he had called the number over 50 times in like one afternoon or one evening. And she questioned him about it and they argued. And he said that that's why her card was cold and distant. It wasn't anything serious. It was just a stupid misunderstanding. Is what he had said.
What misunderstanding warrants you calling the same number 50 times in one day?
Yeah. And turns out the person he had been calling was one of his patients, like his young female Which gross. I'm like, we're violating a lot of issues here, it sounds like.
See, and again, this is why I don't do a male gynecologist.
No.
Mm-mm. That's gross. Nope. That's that right there.
Yeah.
Not okay.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, well, no shit. And not only that, but like, Susan worked at the clinic too. So like she knows who people are and in it even talked about how they, some of the patients, like they became good friends with their patient, the patients, and like they'd go on double dates with their husbands and stuff. Like I thought that was kind of odd. I'm like, isn't that like a conflict of interest? But maybe in the 90s, it wasn't as frowned upon. Whatever. Maybe if they stopped seeing them as a patient, but also like, hey, you've seen all the goods and now let's go out to dinner with my husband and your wife.
Yeah, that seems weird.
Yeah. Thank you. I just needed to verbalize that here, my thoughts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the woman that he had been trying to call, her name is Nina. They also find out that she actually worked as a dancer in a club, a men's club. Mm-hmm. Very attractive young woman. She, you know, they talked to her. She said that she had been a longtime patient of his and that he had been very helpful. She denied that they had any sort of affair. She said that he was just giving her birth control shots and he would come to see her at the club sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure
he did. Yeah. Uh-huh. So,
I mean, even if they didn't have an actual affair,
you're still crossing a line.
You're still crossing. You shouldn't be going to see your patient at work. No matter where she works.
Right.
But I do also wonder, because it's like, listen, if a man is going to give you money and presents,
You're going to, right.
For the thought and hope that maybe eventually it'll lead to something, like, whatever, girl, that's not on you. That's on him.
Right. He's the one in the power there in that relationship. Like, he, is crossing the line. And, like, just giving her birth control shots. Okay, so is he doing this at the club? Is he doing this outside of the clinic? Like, why are you calling her phone for that? You probably have, like, receptionists or whoever that handles setting up appointments. But then he says to the police that she was just very needy and needed a lot of attention. So he was just doing that.
That's like, not a doctor's.
No, that's also not your, like,
no
field of, what am I trying to say?
Yeah. You know. Like, you're not a therapist.
Correct. Like, no. So, you know, no matter what they look at, like, everything just keeps turning back to John. Now they're like, there's really no other explanation. So they arrest him. But everybody, like, that knew him said it was not him. There was no way he was involved in this. He would never, you know, he was such a popular doctor in the community that it just shocked everybody. And everybody was, like, in support of him.
Her DNA was found in his car. There's no reason for that.
And the fact that it was blood and skin, it's like, okay, I get why her DNA would be in there because they're married.
But blood and blood specifically. And stuff, like, no.
Yes. Because that was my first thought, was like, yeah, obviously that's going to be in there, but the skin, the hair, whatever. Yeah. So, like, when he does go to trial too, they talked about how the courtroom was, like, packed and it was all, like, women and they were all his patients and stuff. And I was like, ew.
That's, you were real dirty. Inappropriate with a lot of patients. Yeah, you were, man.
I thought, like,
you've
I can't
been a
believe...
skeezball for a long time. Yes. You kept it hidden for a long time until your wife caught you. And then you got pissed that your facade was going to be broken.
It's disgusting. Like, ew. And because of all that, like, the police said they had so much pressure on them because everybody was so pissed. They're like, he didn't do this, you know? And so, like, everyone was coming for them. Like, they didn't think... You know, nobody thought this was even possible. And of course, he pleads not guilty. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's pretty sure he's going to be, you know, he'll be acquitted of this. So he's kind of dumb because he even takes the stand during his trial. And,
of course he does, because he's a cocky fucking bastard.
Yeah, he sure is. You know, he says this whole thing, you know, puts on a show. He loved his wife. He had tried to save her. He said the blood on the steering wheel was from when he had stopped doing CPR for a moment to go move his car before the emergency vehicles arrived. I'm sorry, if my wife is, like, dead, I'm probably just going to, like, let anybody drive through my yard up to through my house to save her.
I'm not
going to
worry,
like,
about, like, oh, better go move
I better
car.
Move my car out of the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you dipshit. Like,
no.
And they had a huge house. Like, they even had, like, the, what is it? The little half circle. Like,
oh, yeah. Like, the drive up thing. Yeah.
Come up the other way. It takes them, what, 2 extra seconds? Like, you're going to leave your wife to go move it? Yeah, I don't think so. So then it's interesting because then the defense calls an expert witness that is a blood spatter analysis. His name is Tom Bevel. And he takes the stand. And around this time, the prosecution is really, like, they said they used the example of running out of gas. They said they felt like they didn't know what else to do and say. But the prosecutor kind of just in a last, like, Hail Mary Jennifer, just says, did we miss anything, when he's talking to the expert and the guy says yes. And they said that you could feel the air, like, leaving the room. And even the team, the defense team for Dr. Hamilton, they gasped and they were just like, because they didn't see this coming. And so it was interesting because the defense, or the expert for the defense, he said, yeah, even though he was, you know, testifying on behalf of the defense, he has an obligation to tell the truth, whether that's helping them or not. And he said, you know, nobody had asked him this question until now. And so when they asked if they had missed anything, he said that he had actually taken that white shirt that had been worn by Dr. Hamilton right after the murder. And he said that there was only one thing that splatters on it. Okay, what am I saying? Sorry, my notes are real bad, guys. Sorry. He's just saying that basically the way the blood spatter was on the shirt, that had to have been the shirt that whoever killed her was wearing because of the angle of the spatters and how the injuries were to her head. He also says that there's a spatter on John's left shoe that could have only happened if she were alive when that blood went on his shoe. Isn't that crazy, though, how they can tell that kind of thing? Like, you know?
How do they kind of determine that blood spatter? Experts, though, are kind of like...
I don't know.
Think that's reliable anymore. I don't think they take it at face value anymore.
Well, it would be hard to tell, like, if the blood was still, like, oxygenated? What's the word? You know what I'm saying?
Oxygenated?
Yeah. You know, because, like, if they were still alive, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe they need you on their side for the defense because, you know.
No, I think he did it, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah. So they said the defense witness that basically won the case for the prosecution, which is kind of unheard of. So,
yeah.
You know, they said that was one of the first times something like that really happened. So the detectives lay out what they think actually happened. And they said, you know, this couple appeared to have everything on the surface. However, there's this whole scene playing out that nobody saw, and that this life, their perfect life, was basically an illusion. They think that Susan discovered this dancer that he was having an affair with, potentially, or some sort of, you know, emotional involvement. And she was done with it, and she was just distraught. And her friend said that she was the kind of person that she would just be done. And like, I'm getting a divorce. I'm not putting up with this shit. So they think that when this all went down, he just exploded with anger because he didn't want a divorce. He didn't want what that would look like to the public.
I was going to say that would make him shine a light in a bad light because if they're like, why, you know, you guys seem so perfectly happily married. Why is your wife all of a sudden? It's going to come out. She's like, I know he was talking. Plus then he could be getting in trouble.
Yeah. For sure. For
inappropriate all these relationships.
Yeah.
With patients,
who knows what way she was going to take it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they think it was just like the final straw, and that when he'd come home between the surgeries, they talked and she basically told him that she was like leaving him, and he saw that card and he did not want her to leave him. So they think he put his tie around her neck, strangled her. She fell to the floor. And then they think he just grabbed the statue that was nearby and he used it to beat her to death. He had hit her several times. They said he then left, went and did his surgery. Then he came home, made his plan, called 911, did CPR, whatever. So when the verdict was read, John showed no emotion whatsoever. The jury only deliberated for 2 hours, and he was found guilty and sentenced to life without parole. The judge told him he was lucky because I guess the jurors wanted to seek the death penalty, but the death penalty was taken off the table because they couldn't prove that Susan was alive when those fatal blows hit her, is what it said. And I was like, maybe it was different, or their state laws are different. But
I mean,
I think that's kind of funny that the jury was like, no, like we want to
kill him,
take him down. Yeah. So I was like, whatever, man. So, and as part of his sentence, the judge also ordered him to pay $11,104, the cost of his jail stay. They said this is the first time an Oklahoma county defendant has been ordered to make such a payment, which he had the funds.
I mean, he had the money.
Yeah. And then the district the district attorney said that asking for reimbursement for the cost of incarceration will become a policy in his office after that. So I don't know if that's still what's going down or not, but that's pretty funny to me. Susan's daughter, Angela, and her brother actually went to visit him in prison after all of this happened. And they asked him what happened, why he did it. And they said he had no emotion at all. He just sat there like very cowardly and had no answers to them, which they said was just so messed up because he was like their stepdad. I mean, and they were close and they loved him.
Yeah.
So you know, Angela said they feel Susan with them every day, even though she's not physically there. They feel like she's with them every day. She says she has a lot of wonderful women mentors in her life, but it'll never be like having her mom.
Well, yeah.
So that's my bloody Valentine story for you. Literally. I was like, well, he made that nice and bloody and red for Valentine's, but like, ew.
Yeah. No, Dr. I remember
Death
that
is what
case.
Everything said. Yeah,
yeah.
You do see. Oh yeah. The thing I watched too, which I will give you guys, that I couldn't find more than, well, it said that there was like a clips of stuff, but I couldn't find the full episode on like Dateline or whatever, but I did watch, it was called the series is called American Monster. It was season 3, episode 7, called The Last Valentine. And I found it on Discovery Plus, but you can also rent it on Amazon Prime. Okay. So
I'll have you text that to me and I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I will give that to you. But that is the Valentine case, which is, you know, it's always the husband did it. Am I right?
It is. It is.
Yeah. I know. And I was like, this is kind of obvious, but like, I really was sad because when they showed like home videos of all of them and stuff, they all just like, it's like this dude just snapped. And I think he just like got a little too like arrogant with his, you know, following of women and thought he was untouchable. And so,
For sure.
He's sick and he's ew. Like, I just see him. I was like, you just look like a giant piece of shit. Like, gross.
Men. I tell
you. So that's that. That's what I got. That's the end of that.
Well, for the fact, I decided to stick with I was like, I'm going to find a Valentine's Day fact. And then the one I found kind of seemed so fitting for our podcast. The very first Valentine that was ever sent was sent from prison.
No.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The Duke of Orleans wrote the first Valentine in the early 15th century while he was imprisoned. I don't know what he was in prison for. I thought about looking up, but I didn't. But he wrote, and also the first, so not only was it sent from prison, but the first Valentine was a poem that he sent to his second wife.
Oh, well, would you look at that? Interesting. So,
yeah.
You know, on that note of Valentine things, I have to find this. When I was searching, you know, looking for a story, I don't know if you're familiar with St. Valentine's Day Massacre. This was in like 1929. Okay, you were? Okay.
Didn't I mention that to you? Like, didn't I say something? I was like, worst case scenario, you could always do the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Maybe. Because
wasn't it in Chicago?
Yeah, actually. And that's funny because I was like going to, but then I was like, it's such an old case that I was like, I don't know what I could all find, but it is on Wikipedia. Yeah. And so it's interesting, but yeah, you know, we'll save that for next year or next week or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe wasn't you could say that.
Because wasn't Al Capone part of it?
Yeah.
Because they also showed it on Boardwalk Empire because Al Capone was portrayed on that show. But I did know about it prior to that. But yes.
I knew a little bit about it, but not the details like that I had read when I was doing that. And I was like, oh, but then I figured, I was like, if it's such a big thing, probably everyone knows about it. So,
I feel like we learned about it in history class.
Really? I don't know that we did.
I don't know.
Maybe we did. Maybe I didn't pay attention that day. But, and also not on that note, because it's not related at all, but we had talked about it and I was going to make a post, which I was waiting to find a good thing to share with it. But, for those of you that remember the case, I don't remember what episode it was that we covered, the Carrie Farber, Dave Krupa, Liz Goyer case that was in Omaha, Nebraska, where the woman was stalked. Well, the man was stalked. It was a whole love triangle. I don't want to give too much of it away. So they made this documentary movie and I've seen it posted on all of these different groups I'm in. And it's wild since it's from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. It was their featured film on Friday. And it's called, what did I say it was called? Lover, Stalker, Killer or something.
Yeah.
And so for those of you that know that case or just are local, it was really well done. I was actually very impressed with it. And that's just kind of a follow-up, not a follow-up, but just more on the case and the fact that they made it because it's like such a crazy one that got national attention. So
I'll have to watch that while I'm off.
Yeah, it was really good.
I know we haven't been doing that, but I do have to mention two shows.
Because I mean, I was going to mention that anyway, since it was related to this.
The Has-Been Hotel on Amazon Prime is an adult cartoon about Lucifer and Lilith's daughter creating a hotel trying to redeem demons to go back to heaven. And it's a musical. Now, Shannon, I don't know if it would be your cup of tea per se. It is very adult. But for those of you who like got into like The Boys, like it's that kind of adult. Like the Amazon show and stuff. It's hilarious, but also very adult. And the artwork is great and the music is hilarious and beautifully done. So I had to talk about that. But then also a friend sent me, there's a show called Living with the Dead or Living for the Dead on Hulu. And I thought it was like only murders in the building, but like ghost hunting. No, legit ghost hunting show. But it's five queer people going to these places. They are amazing. I watched the first three episodes. Kristen Stewart narrates it.
I can't stand
it. No, it's Kristen hilarious. Stewart. I love it. I love it so much. I want to be friends with these people. I was like, I need to reach out and see if we can get them on our podcast because, like, the whole paranormal aspect of
what's things. It called? Living with the Dead?
Living for the Dead.
Living for the Dead.
Oh my goodness.
Because I think I've seen it on there, but I was like, yeah. I don't really know what this is. So
I thought it was like an actual, like, I thought it was like a TV show.
Right.
But no, it's like actual fictional... legit ghost hunting.
Oh.
And
okay.
stuff. Like, okay. Oh, it was one. The people are all a delight, and I want it. So I just had to, like, I have to tell people about this. Go watch it.
Yeah, I have. Maybe I've seen that on there. I don't know. I feel like there's so much on there, and I haven't watched a ton lately, other than the one I watched the other day because,
yeah,
I saw that on there, and it was so funny because when I saw this starting, I was like, "Ooh, this sounds good," and then I was like, "Oh my gosh!" I was like, "I know this case. We did this case." So.
I watched the Hazbin Hotel. That was super short. Like, I think there was like eight episodes or something. They're on like 20-30 minutes. But I watched that last week, kind of off and on. Jesse and I watched it when I came back home, and then I finished it the next day. But I've still just been reading, and it's like then when I'm like zoning out, I like then watch something. So
yeah. Hey, well, that's good. You know, whatever passes the time, and you're, you know.
Yeah, because I still have to, like, take it easy. Like, I can't lift over 10 pounds. And, like, if I'm up and moving, doing too much, then I, like, get achy and tired. So it's, like, doing as much as I can a little bit at a time and stuff. So, yeah.
Sure. Well, cool.
But that's what we got this week, you guys.
Yeah.
It's Black History Month. So all of my books currently are written by Black authors. And I've read some phenomenal ones. I read some spicy.
I've read a few books, but nothing. I mean, well, they're worth mentioning, but I don't know.
It is. Cool. So you guys know the drill. Follow us, like us, rate, review, share our shit. We appreciate it. Everything is linked in the show notes. Hopefully in a few weeks, I'll let you know. I'll keep you posted if I caught anything on camera or recording. I'm not going to lie. I'm not hopeful about it. But
it's hard when there's a big group regardless. Yeah. I mean, it's a fun experience, but probably not. Yeah.
It was definitely a fun experience.
Great to get the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So until next time, guys, stay heartland kind.
But darkland weary.